morning I'm going to start off talking about a very well-known dialogue from the Book of Serenity, but it's also in the Blue Cliff Records. Book of Serenity, this is a book of, it says, 100 Zen dialogues, and they became then, they were dialogues between teachers of students, and they became cases then that were commented on and meditated on in subsequent centuries to today. And the one I'm going to talk about is the one that is the most well-known and that I have talked about probably lots of times. But that's okay. and it's Zhao Shou's dog, Joshu's dog, depending on whether you use the Chinese or the Japanese pronunciation. And it's pretty simple. A monk asks, I'm going to use the Japanese pronunciation because it's easier for me to use my tongue with it. A monk asked Joshu, does a dog have Buddha nature? Joshu said, yes. The monk said something else. I'm going to skip some of this. Another monk said, does a dog have Buddha nature? Joshu said, no, or mu. So that's what's generally meditated on. That's what's generally meditated on. Although, more often than not, it's the last one. It's the, does the dog have Buddha nature? With the answer mu, the answer no, that's been the subject of meditation over the centuries, especially in Rinzai Zen. So it seems like kind of a stupid. A lot of these koans seem kind of stupid, and this one. If somebody asks you, well, what Zen's about, you say, well, this is the most famous case statement of Zen. People say, what is Zen? So, but anyway, it became the founder of Rinzai Zen, Linchi Rinzai, got into it. It was passed down to him, and he got into it. And he said to his monks more than once when he gave it to them to meditate on, then they'd come into Doksan. That's the one-to-one meeting in Rinzai Zen. It's a little less friendly than in Soto Zen when you come in. In fact, it's much less friendly. At least that was my experience. And so here he says to one of his monks, if you say yes, I'll beat you. If you say no, I'll beat you. Go find the answer for yourself. Whoa, that is a very welcoming. Very welcoming, isn't it? So let me play with this for a minute. Even a dog. Well, here we are in China in the 9th century. Dogs are, you don't have pet dogs. There are no pet dogs in the night. Dogs are curs. Dogs are vicious. Dogs carry diseases. Sometimes you will eat dog, but only the best dog. Most dogs you wouldn't even eat. You wouldn't. Dogs terrorize people. And so if a dog has a Buddha nature, then what was Shakyamuni doing, struggling to find his ultimate being for all those years, if even the dog has it? That would be kind of the Chinese point of view. Even a cur has it. It just, why go through all this struggle when you've got it? So yes is inadequate. No is inadequate too. Because, especially in our type of Buddhism, all sentient beings have the Buddha nature. That means all beings with consciousness. But there aren't any beings that don't have consciousness. Rocks, grasses, rivers, sky, they all have consciousness. So, to say, no, the dog doesn't have it when all beings have it. So both answers are miss the mark. They both miss the mark. So I was talking about this once a few years ago with in a retreat, in a session, in a retreat, and the person came to have Doksan with me, and he asked me, he said, "Does a dog have Buddha nature?" And I went, "Woof, woof." Well, I was preparing for this talk yesterday, and I saw someone ask Bokaju, "Does a dog have Buddha nature?" And he went, "Arf, arf." And I thought, "Oh, that's pretty cool. This must be the dog lineage. the stretching centuries back." So, Robert Pirsig, who was one of the founders of this center. Robert Pirsig, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Really, if it wasn't for Robert Pirsig, we wouldn't be here today. Is Eric Storley here today? If it wasn't for Eric Storley and Robert Pirsig, we wouldn't be here today. He did. He did. And you and I spent a whole afternoon passing out flyers to... What did we do? We went... We were trying to get people to come to his talk, right? Yeah. And we had a huge auditorium of people who came to his talk, right? Yeah, yeah. People always are saying here, "Oh, we're so poor, we can't raise money." You can raise money for anything if you really care about it. Anything. It's no big deal. Sorry. We did it. We did it. Anyway, that's an aside. So Robert Pirsig says, Robert Pirsig wrote about this koan years ago in Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. And he says, and he talks about mu, which is the Japanese answer. The Chinese say wu, the Japanese say mu, same word, right? Same ideograph, same character. And he says... Well, don't translate mu as no. Translate it as no thing. And he says it means unasking the question. He offered the example of a computer circuit using the binary numeral system. And here I'm quoting from him. For example, it's stated over and over again that computer circuits exhibit only two states, a voltage for one and a voltage for zero. That's silly. Any computer electronics technician knows otherwise. Try to find a voltage representing one or zero when the power is off. The circuits are in a mu state. So clinging to the binary system creates the problem. Just like clinging to language creates the problem in Zen practice. Then the conditions of the question... Sometimes they don't match reality. So how can we open up to a reality which is not just stuck to yes or no? Well, Robert Pirsig says by turning off the circuit, by turning the power off. So that's, in a sense, what our goal is in our Zen practice, is just to turn the power off. We're always... powered by all these worries and concerns, just to turn them off. Of course, we cannot turn them off. We cannot, because we create them. They are we. So the we who creates them just creates more by trying to turn them off. But they can turn off. This is Rahatsu Sesshin, and a whole bunch of people are sitting. I think I saw Rosemary said 25 yesterday, 22 today. Are sitting here for almost a week celebrating this historical Buddha's opening to Buddha nature, to his still nature, and celebrating it by doing the same practice that he did. As much as we know, this is all semi-mythological, but as much as we know. and with a hope that each of us who's practicing, although I'm not here doing the retreat this time, but each of us, each of you, could have an experience where you're not caught by your binary thinking, by all your concepts, and that define who we are, that define who we are. So, I've been sitting here in these sessions, like Eric, for many, many years. Only Eric, I've done more than you, you know. So, but I'm not doing this one because I've been ill. So, on my way over, I was thinking, I feel sad. I feel sad not to just be coming and giving a talk and then going home. That's part of who I am. I've been doing this for so many years. There's a hole. There's a gap. And there's sadness in that gap. Sadness. Because that's my identity, right? My identity. And also, I feel a little embarrassed. I went to a movie last night. I thought, well, if I'm going to a movie, I should be well enough to do the sesshin. I won't tell anybody. Don't tell anyone. Embarrassed. I'm the guiding teacher, and I'm watching a movie while everybody else is sitting here watching movies which are not of their own choice. I get to watch the movies of my own choice. So that's contingent emotion, as I've been talking about in my life. That's emotion that's based on my experience, on Tim's experience, on Tim's feelings, his memories, his experiences with other people. I feel sad because I have memories of enjoying being here with you in stillness. I enjoy that. And that's part of who I am. It's a key part of who I am. So that's missing, and I feel sad. So that's our identity. That's our identity. That's contingent emotion. But Buddha nature is non-contingent. Non-contingent. Not contingent on anything. What we can wake up to through paying attention to these contingent emotions, letting them be, is non-contingent, is a well-being, a happiness, a joy that's not dependent on anything, not dependent on being sick or being well or being sad or being mad. The sad, mad, sick, well all come and go. But the non-contingent stillness, the non-contingent openness is what the Buddha nature is all about. And you can call it the Buddha nature or the no Buddha nature or the Buddha nature, no Buddha nature or whatever. Doesn't matter. Irrelevant. Irrelevant. You could bark or meow or be completely quiet. All right? So we pass through dukkha. D-U-K-K-H-A, that's suffering, to realize sukha, S-U-K-K-H-A, joy, the joy which is non-contingent. And the suffering stays for your whole life. Now, I know in these Buddha, in these Pali scriptures, it doesn't seem to stay for his whole life, but I don't know. Everybody I know, it stays for their whole life, including me. So, and of course, the deal here is, as I've been saying, and as you guys know, who've been practicing for a while, only by radically accepting the embarrassment of not being who I'm supposed to be, right? radically accepting that, recognizing it, radically accepting it, can I let it go? And the letting it go that I do is the letting go of I. It's the letting go of I. And it's opening up to Buddha nature. To Buddha nature. Which is, includes I. It includes I. It doesn't kick anybody out. Buddha nature doesn't go around kicking people out. Tim could be as embarrassed as he wants. Right? No problem. No problem for Buddha nature. So, a group of you like me are just here for the morning, and a group is sitting here for 7 days in Sesshin, or 5 days, or 2 days, or 1 day. We have a Sesshin here at Zen Center every month. It's a retreat. Sometimes we call them Sesshin, sometimes we don't. But they're what my teachers would consider Sesshins, because people sit quietly for a half day or more. And that sitting quietly for long periods of time is essential to getting a sense of what Buddha nature is or is not, and is not. Essential. And I've talked before about the etymology of the word Sesshin, but not in a lot of detail. And I want to do a little bit about that. I want to talk a little bit about that today. Sesshin, Setsu. Made up of two ideographs, two characters, Setsu and Shin. Let's see, I brought a Setsu with me. Setsu. There's a Setsu, right? Everybody seen one of these before? Setsu, Shin. This, for those of you who are uninitiated, this is the stick that is used to clean your bowls during Sesshin. And this is the Setsu tip, and you clean your bowls after you eat. Each bowl you clean, and you eat the residue in your bowl. So Setsu Shin. So Setsu Shin means to collect the mind. To collect Setsu, we collect. We collect all the debris. Shin, the mind. We collect the mind. And you know, it says Shin. Especially during meals, but during each activity in Sesshin, we're trying to collect the mind. We're trying to collect the mind so that we just don't get run over by those contingent emotions. So that we come back and just can completely see those emotions and let them go without making something out of them, without turning them into the end of the world or something awful, or even something wonderful, just as bad, something wonderful. So, Setsu Shin is what we're practicing, or what they're practicing. I'm going home. I won't watch TV when I get home, though. This is my self-talk, right? We all have this self-talk. It's very interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. Turning the power off doesn't mean you get rid of the self-talk. It means you disidentify with the self-talk. The self-talk is just the radio. It's not your radio. It's just the radio. So to collect the mind. So when we clean our bowl, I've eaten my rice, and my rice is in here, and I want to get all the rice out of my bowl. So I really have to collect the mind while I'm cleaning my bowl. Because if I leave one little quarter of rice in there, it's going to be in there for the whole week. Nobody's going to want to sit next to me. It's going to start to get... Well, we won't get into that, but you know, this is how we're cleaning our bowls. So we have to collect the mind. I mean, we have to focus to do that. We have to focus. So each activity in Sesshin is designed in a way to help us collect the mind, help us focus, help us come back to just this experience. Just this experience. And setsu shin also means to touch the heart mind. So shin sometimes is translated as mind, sometimes as heart mind. Touch the heart mind. To touch the Buddha nature. By collecting the mind, by stilling the mind, by bringing the mind back just to this, whatever this is, we touch something. It's not a thing, but we touch it. And it's quite wonderful. But if we say it's quite wonderful, then we go off on another trip about how wonderful it is. And that's contingent emotion. Because this is not contingent. I get to piss and moan all I want. Contingent, non-contingent Buddha nature doesn't mind. How could it mind? How could it mind? So, in a way, Soto Zen, which is the Zen that we do here at Zen Center, is all practice in intimacy. It's all practice in being intimate with the rice in your bowl as you're eating it, with the walking into the meditation hall, with the sitting down, with each thing you do, and outside in the world. It's being intimate. And that itself is enlightenment. My teacher used to say a lot, he said, there are no enlightened people, there are only enlightened actions, only enlightened activity. We get this idea about she's got it but I don't, I've got it but she doesn't. But that's all about identity. That's all about me, Tim, wanting something. John wanting something that someone else has, or wanting to keep something. So, setsu shin, if you reverse the ideographs, setsu shin, and I don't know any ideographs, so, but anyway, if you reverse them, it's shin setsu. And shin setsu in Japanese means to have intimate connection. That's pretty cool, isn't it? To have intimate connection, intimate connections. Also, to be kind, to be warm-hearted, to be generous. Because when we have an intimate connection to that little piece of rice in our bowl, we're kind. We're warm-hearted toward it. We're generous. We are. We had intimate connection to that feeling of sadness, of not being able to be here with you, or embarrassment. How about it? About not doing my job? That's quite wonderful. Be intimate with it. And then I don't identify with it anymore. And then it comes back again. But that's the way life goes, isn't it? It comes back again. So, I always, during Rahatsu, I usually talk about my teachers, my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi. Well, I'm only giving one talk, so I got to get him in here somewhere. So, getting him in here. Shin setsu. To have intimate connections. So, a few times I would have, this is my teacher in San Francisco when I was a young man, and we had him over for dinner on different occasions, and he always brought a special sweet for dessert. Special Japanese sweet for dessert. And, of course, I was touched by that. I was touched by that. But then I saw that all Japanese people do that. And the Japanese woman said to me once, "Yes, Tim, that's shinsetsu." I said, "Oh, what's shinsetsu mean?" She said, "Intimate connection. Intimate connection." But then if it just turns into a habit, it's not intimate connection anymore. Then it's just something we do contingently to be good. So the story I've told many times is going to the art gallery in San Francisco with my teacher, Suzuki, when I was a young man, and going with I think I was going with three friends. And my roommate, Ruth, couldn't go. Said she couldn't go at the last minute. She just couldn't go. And we were going to the art gallery, and we were going to hear a lecture that Suzuki particularly wanted to hear. And we'd looked at the art, and then we went to the lecture. But he was gone during the lecture. He was gone. He missed the whole lecture. It was a short lecture. And I was kind of annoyed. I was a little concerned, a little annoyed, too, because I'd set this up. I'd driven him, and he said he wanted to come. And I said, "Where were you?" Only I probably didn't say it like that. I probably, I put him on a pretty high pedestal, so I probably said something like, "Where were you?" And he said, "I was buying a card for Ruth." Well, Ruth was my roommate. And Ruth suffered from, this was winter in San Francisco. And you think winter in San Francisco is nice. That's not nice. It's damp. You never see the sun. Minnesota, you see the sun, maybe 30 below, but the sun is really bright. And so her depression was, I think, she was having a difficult time that day. Now, how did he know that? I don't know. Some kind of a psychic or something? Well, probably he just noticed her. I mean, all kinds of people think about psychic stuff. But really, if you pay attention, you see lots of things. You don't have to be psychic. You just watch someone. Just watch there. Watch them. He saw that Ruth wasn't there in the morning. Duh. He saw that when he called her, when he went over to see her, she had kind of a resignation in her voice. So anybody can see that. But anyway, I thought he was psychic. Oh, and I said, "What did you get her?" He said, "I'm sure it's for her, not for you." So we went back to my house, and I didn't say anything. The next day, I saw a little card on the table in the dining room, because we shared the dining room, from him to Ruth. And it was a card of crows gathering in Lafayette Park. Well, we lived near Lafayette Park in San Francisco. And the crows didn't care about the weather. They didn't care about seasonal affective disorder. They just gathered in Lafayette Park. Middle of winter, foggy day, they'd just be gathering. And Ruth liked to walk over to Lafayette Park. It was two or three blocks. I liked to walk there, too. So not only picked out a card for her, that's why he missed the whole talk, because he spent his whole time, I mean, this is what I think, going through cards, finding the right one, maintaining the intimate connection, maintaining it, honoring it, enjoying it. So that's what we can do. That's our practice. That's our practice. Lots of times we fall off. Lots of times we get pissed. Lots of times we get discouraged. But we can always come back to being intimate with that pissed, to be intimate with that discouraged. And that will bring us back to here. To here. It means we don't judge it. We don't evaluate it. We don't tell any extra story about it. We just let it be. If we can radically accept our own embarrassment, then we can deal with other people's. We can radically accept theirs too. Right? But the we doesn't do it. It's the we is shed in the doing of that. So, Sesshin, Shinsetsu, is the way that we, in our tradition, tap into and manifest the Buddha nature, the no Buddha nature, whatever you want to call it. And Wu Men is a commentator who comments on many, many of the cases, and he comments on this one, the one that I've been talking about. And he says, a few things. He says, "Don't be a ghost clinging to bushes and weeds. Don't be a ghost clinging to bushes and weeds. So all the fixations that provide the ghost with identity, all the fixations, don't cling to them. Don't cling to them. And see them. See the fixation that gives Tim his identity as guiding teacher. See that fixation. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. That's a strong fixation that it almost pulls me out of bed just to be here, even when I'm really sick. That's a strong fixation. Where did it come from? It's contingent. It came from something in my life. Probably the males, all the non-wimpy males in my family. You know, being a wimp. Couldn't be wimps, right? You women don't know about that, I don't think, too much. Yeah, I don't know what you know about. Some of you know about that. You have other issues. Other issues. So, woman says, don't be a ghost clinging to bushes and weeds. And Putong says about this same case, he says, intimacy practice can at times be fully entering into the flames of hell. Fully entering into the flames of hell. And then woman says, in the six realms, we enjoy a samadhi of frolic and play. So the hell realm, that's the lowest realm. We fully enter into that realm. That means we don't pretend it's not there. We see it, we take care of it, we deal with it. Seasonal affective disorder, the crows in the park. Every day, almost every day, Ruth went for a walk, looked at the crows in the park. That helped her. Seasonal affective disorder. She was intimate with her seasonal affective disorder. As much as she could be. She was a serious Zen student, serious Zen practitioner. But not too serious. Not too serious. If you get too serious, you forget about intimacy because you're trying to get something. Intimacy doesn't try to get anything. So, woman said, in the six realms we enjoy a samadhi of frolic and play. So the six realms, which most of you guys know, we could call those the six major types of contingent emotional states. Why not? The hell realm, well, we know what those contingent emotional states are like, right? The cold hells, which are, that's depression. The hot hells, which are great anxiety, great angst. And he's saying we can be intimate with those. We can be intimate with those. And in that intimacy, in that careful attention to whatever is, there's freedom. There's the Buddha nature. The animal realm. The ghost realm, the hungry ghost realm. Well, they're different orders. I learned them different ways. But the next one then is the hungry ghost realm. The hungry ghost realm. I'm not good enough. Tim's got it. Rosemary's got it. Can I get a little whiff of it? Can I just get a whiff of it? I'm a hungry ghost. Hungry ghosts, you know, have necks that are like this wide, like a half an inch wide. They've got bellies that are huge. They're trying to get a little bit of rice down in their huge bellies. They never have enough. They never have enough. They never feel good enough. They never feel like they're living up to anything. So that's the second type of emotional, contingent emotional realm. And the third type is the animal realm. Food. When is Zazen going to be over? I talk about this almost every retreat, but nothing to look forward to during a retreat except food. Getting your legs out of an uncomfortable posture and then food. What kind of food? What's the Tenzo going to do this time? He's not going to give us some of that macrobiotic crap again, is he? Can't we have some real food? That's the animal realm, right? Food, sex, drugs, rock and roll. Can you at least give us some rock and roll with our food? That's the third type of emotional state. A fourth type of emotional state. The poor human is trying to figure out, what's the Buddha nature? Does Tim have it? Can I have it? Is it yes? Is it no? Is it maybe so? Is this meditation right? Is this meditation better? How come my meditation doesn't work and hers does? Oh, that's the human realm, right? The human realm is always trying stuff, never giving up, but always trying to figure things out. Sometimes getting something figured out for a minute, and then it's gone. It's gone. Got to figure it out again. And the fifth contingent emotional state is, and some of you guys know this better than I do, is the jealous spirit. Jealous spirit almost has it made. But someone else is getting in his or her way. Like, what's this brown robed woman doing here sitting next to me? I thought I was the guiding teacher around here. What's she doing? How rude. Right? That's a jealous spirit. I don't want any of the brown robed people around here. I did this for years and years. I'm the man. Right? Jealous spirit. And then the God realm. The sixth contingent emotional state. I am the man. I am the man. I am the enlightened one. It's fine. You can sit here, honey, but I'm the enlightened one. Sit here and all the brown you want. You guys can all have brown. I'm the enlightened one. Look at me. Look at me. I'm the man. Well, I'm the woman, too, right? So those are the six contingent emotional states, or types of emotional states. And he says, in the six realms, we enjoy a samadhi of frolic and play. Frolic and play. Frolic and play, because we're just intimate with it, just as it is. And then it doesn't hang around. It moves a lot, but we just move with it because there's no other we than this swinging door. There's no other we than the swinging door. We just swing with it. So Aiken Roshi says, we discover children's, lambs, birds, frolicking in our own blood. And Wu Man's final comment is, quit thinking of Buddha nature in terms of has and has not. Has and has not. That's the armor that the jealous God tries to put on. Has. I've got enough armor now so I can be the one. And then the God has got all the armor he needs, but As you know, who've studied this, the God, the person who's in the God realm is the one who's closest to the hell realm. You know this about people who are narcissistic, don't you? And of course, we're all narcissistic in Buddhist terms. But there's a diagnosis of narcissism in psychology, you know. And people who are narcissistic are closest to the hell realm. Does that make sense? So, in our meditation practice, how about not being judgmental? How about not being judgmental? Novel idea. I mean, we do meditation to let go of being judgmental, and then we become judgmental during our meditation. Isn't it true? Isn't it true? Anybody who's sat during a retreat knows that. Oh, and anybody who's sat for regularly, or by just a half an hour or 20 minutes a day knows that, right? We start the meditation not to be judgmental, and then the meditation becomes another rationale for our being judgmental. So how about being intimate with whatever comes up? How about being intimate with your neighbor's breathing during sesshin, if they're breathing really hard and you want to get away because they're disturbing your meditation? How about being intimate with them? How about being intimate with your distaste of their heavy breathing? How about being intimate with whatever? And as I've been saying in my talks I've been giving lately, and I got this from Basho. I got this from what's-her-name, who did the nice book on Basho. I can't remember her name. Oh, Jane Hirschfield. The practice of intimacy is permeability. And that's the Buddha nature, permeability. So, let's practice. Let's continue to practice. Whether we're here in the Zendo for 5 more days or 3 more hours, or whether we're going off to do things on Sunday, be at home or be with friends or whatever, let's practice Setsu Shin, okay? Let's practice gathering all the crumbs in our bowl together, not kicking any of those crumbs out, gathering them all together. All the debris in our mind, gathering them, and eating them. So we have a clean bowl. Wow, a Buddha nature shines, always is shining, as we're eating that residue, as we're digesting that residue. It's very nourishing, great nourishment. We gather them, they gather you, the great gathering, the gathering of crows in Lafayette Park, or the gathering of crows in the backyard of MZMC. Well, I've never seen a gathering of crows. I see solitary crows, a solitary crow. So, as Robert Pirsig said, it's no thing. It's no thingness. It's not nothingness. It's not no. It's not yes. It's no thing. Because it's fluid. Because it's moving. We don't have to turn it into something concrete. Because it's alive. Even in death, it's completely alive. And it has no interest in Buddha nature. Or no Buddha nature. But it enjoys those terms as they're tripping off the tongue. A lot of things trip off the tongue. So, that's what I want to say for this morning. And the usual protocol is not to ask for questions during sesshin. So I am going to follow that usual protocol.